Hello, welcome to The Lancet in Conversation With. I'm Gavin Cleaver. It's February 2021, and this year marks the 50th anniversary of The Lancet publishing The Inverse Care Law, an event we're marking with a special issue, which you can read online now at thelancet.com. To talk a bit more about the Inverse Care Law and its relevance to the modern day, I'm joined by Professor Sir Muir Gray, former Chief Knowledge Officer to the NHS and the person who developed the NHS's framework for value. Professor Muir, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Well, a great year.
So the inverse care law, stated quite simply, is the availability of good medical care tends to vary inversely with the need for it in the population served. So 50 years on then from the publication, how important have this kind of notion of equity and equality in healthcare access and health outcomes remained?
Well, I would say it's even more important now because need and demand are greater than the resources available, and simply doing more of the same is not sufficient. Because what we're doing at the moment ignores the problem of equity and also ignores the important difference between inequality and inequity, which I find almost everywhere I go. And that's a key concept. The concept of inequality is objective. So we know that people from deprived subgroups of the population have a higher mortality rate and morbidity rate, and that's ethically wrong. And it can also be explained by a variety of objective factors. Well, let's use the word wealth in the broadest sense, although maybe parental education is the most important determinant. And I found many of my colleagues and many parts of the NHS very indignant about inequality and keen to wage war on inequality. I did, however, point out at one meeting I was at that our salaries were part of inequality. I said this to the British Medical Association, we had a working party on inequality. I say, but our salaries are part of this. There's no law of nature that says my salary should be eight times the old age pension. And I'm a member of the BMA to keep my salary up in comparison with the private sector. But we overlook the fact that we are part of inequality. And tackling inequality is a big and complex thing. But inequity, which is what Julian Tudor Hart pointed out, is something which is much more under our control, but much less recognised. So I see people campaigning about inequality, but completely puzzled about the distinction between inequality and inequity.
So you have an awful lot of expertise in the notion of kind of quality of healthcare. To what extent does this feed back into the inverse care law?
Well, that was the paradigm. And I've seen over the years a number of paradigms develop. This wonderful phrase, the paradigm shift, that is such a brilliant idea. And interestingly, it's 50 years this year since the publication of another paradigm shift paper, also from Wales, Effectiveness and Efficiency by Archie Cochrane, was first published in 1971 by another left-wing thinker. He was actually a communist at one stage, along with Sir Richard Dahl. So that led to the effectiveness paradigm. Then along came the evidence-based paradigm. Then along came the cost-effectiveness paradigm. Then along came the quality and safety paradigm, where we recognised for the first time that there were lots of quality and safety problems in healthcare. And all of these are very important, as is the efficiency paradigm. But John Cotter, the management guru, said there's nothing more silly than doing the wrong thing efficiently and at higher levels of quality. So what we've done is focus on quality and completely overlook the fact that, first shown in a study from Oxford 10 years ago, that people from the most deprived subgroups of the population get only about a third of the hip and knee replacements from the NHS as people from the wealthiest subgroups of the population. So simply doing more and more better is not sufficient. And what we are trying to do is to say you have to look not just at the service you offer the patients who manage to reach the service, but the service for the population that provides the resources to pay for your service. Population healthcare is the new paradigm. Focus on value and thinking of inequity as well as quality.
Yeah, so you're from Glasgow, and it's an area that often scores quite poorly in UK health outcomes. And of course, it's among the most deprived, which feeds back into the inverse care law that we're talking about, of course. And we still see kind of similar situations and outcomes in the area of South Wales, where Julian Tudor Hart practiced. What sort of focus still needs to be brought to these areas?
Well, yes, Glasgow and South Wales, Julian and I discussed that on a number of occasions. Actually, my first paper on The Lancet in 1977 was about the failure of preventive medicine, because we tend to focus on saying to people, well, if you don't do this, then it may be, the subjunctive mood, it may be that you won't have a heart attack in 35 years' time. Whereas in places like Glasgow and South Wales, time finishes next Friday. They have no superannuation or pension schemes, or they don't own their own house. So there's an anthropological issue about the concept of time and of what we mean by reality. But then there's the issue of what we're going to do about these problems. And as I say, the NHS should be looking to see, at least it's trying to compensate for deprivation. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, everywhere we look, we see that you can classify health problems into either those with unequivocal indications for referral, a fractured femur, for example, and those with equivocal reasons for self-referral and referral. So there's not a social class difference in the percentage of people with fractured neck or femur reaching the hospital. But then if you take these equivocal issues like hip pain or headache or skin disease or breathlessness, then firstly the person has to make a decision to go and see their GP, and then the GP's got to refer them, and then the hospital has got to decide on intervention, completely overlooking the fact that if I turn up at hospital, I may be losing pay because I'm on an hourly rate paid when I turn up. And I think what is needed is that every service should have one person, even one doctor, even one half day a week with a map on the wall, plotting where people are coming from and relating that to the deprivation of the level of the ward in which these people are coming from. Population healthcare. And The Lancet's published on population healthcare. So I think that is the new paradigm. So even though you can't overcome all the problems, you're at least trying to think that I know there is either an equal amount of disease in this subgroup or there's more disease. So at least looking at ways in which we can mitigate and minimise inequity by, for example, holding clinics nearer where people are, or making it easier for them to do a digital consultation so they don't have to take time off work, or running evening clinics if they're paid for working the day. So there are things that can be done to mitigate inequity. But if we don't even recognise inequity, we're unlikely to take steps to mitigate it.
How common in the NHS is that kind of concept of proactivity that you were talking about there, of I guess, clinicians actually kind of seeking out problems ahead of when they might be presented to healthcare, which, as you said, of course, is less likely to be presented in some of these areas?
Yeah, the jargon is in older people is sometimes population health management, but that's usually focused on clinical conditions and not on social conditions. So I would say at the moment it's very low priority in the NHS in Wales and in England. We have another reorganisation, my 28th, I think, coming up. And at least the word population is in there. So starting to think about the population. Now, in 1948, we did set up a system for universal healthcare, and we gave GPs responsibility for populations. But we gave population responsibility to public health professionals, and sent them off to local government, and the clinicians were given responsibility for the patients who were referred. But I am seeing a change now, and I'm actually very hopeful that we will see a concern with the population. And COVID will be helpful in this. If we did for non-infectious diseases what we've been doing for infectious diseases, that would make a big difference. Namely, the denominator is not the number of patients seen, but the number of people in need in the population. So that will be the future.
So earlier, I read out the first part of the inverse care law. Now, to look at the second part, the second sentence at least, which was it operates more completely where medical care is most exposed to market forces and less so where exposure is reduced. Market interference in healthcare is still very much a problem. And it seems sometimes as well, in the NHS, for example, it's becoming more and more of a problem. Why do you think this is, and kind of what can be done?
Well, it's a wrong philosophy, I think. Nobel Prize for Economics was awarded jointly to Eleanor Ostrom and Oliver Williamson. And Eleanor Ostrom developed the concept of the tragedy of the commons. And Oliver Williamson showed that when managing complex problems, privatizing them or regulating them or putting them in a market didn't work. It was very expensive. It didn't work. Healthcare is the most complex business on earth. And we need to manage it like a group of shepherds managing common grazing land, or a group of fisher folk managing the fish in a river, namely by a collaborative culture and by the culture of stewardship. This old word now coming back in, partly for environmental reasons, but feeling that there is a finite set of resources and each of us individually has a part to play in that. So privatization, getting private business to run it, introducing the market, these are linear solutions to complex problems, and they don't work. So you see the same problems, whatever the structure of the health service. We need a new culture, the culture of value, the culture that focuses on populations and individuals, and the culture of stewardship, where everyone feels responsible for managing resources. That's why I tried to ban the word manager, because it allows clinicians to hate managers, whereas clinicians are managing resources. So it's people who manage we need to think about. So I feel it is coming, but there's a belief in structural change. And I see I've got my 28th reorganization of the structure. And this one does mention the culture a bit. But as you know, culture is more important than structure.
So you mentioned there, of course, the concept of value. When we think about value in healthcare, broadly, what are we talking about?
Well, the word value is at one time a tricky word, but also very simple. All around the world, people rub their fingers together, whether they're farmers or tailors or citizens, about value. Value and worth is another synonym for value. We find it helpful to think of three different dimensions of value. Value to the individual. There's value from the resources that a health service has. So you know, how many patients can they treat with the resources available, sometimes called technical value. And then there's population value. And there's two aspects of that. One is allocation. Have the resources being allocated optimally? And resources are allocated optimally where you can't get any more health by shifting a pound from one budget to another, you know, from the musculoskeletal budget to the cardiovascular budget. No one has ever got there, of course. And the other aspect of value is what's sometimes called social value, the other aspect of population value. And I was involved once in a project where we set up a centre for greening the NHS, and we'd one hospital that was working with local farmers to procure the food supplies locally. But then somebody made a decision and a multinational corporation delivered frozen food from East Europe. So that's not social value. It may be, in the short term, financial value. So triple value for the individual, for the organization, and for the population. And within the population, there is both allocative value. Are we allocating the resources appropriately? And then there's this broader issue of social value. Are we using the resources for the benefit of the community that provided them, namely the people that we serve? So that's the way value is. Value in the singular, of course, is different from values in the plural, which you could also use principles as a... But English is a very difficult language.
It certainly is. Finally, then, it wouldn't even be a podcast without me asking a question about COVID by this point. So looking back over the last 12 months, kind of both locally, I guess, and internationally, what are some of your reflections?
Well, the reflections are that it has emphasised the importance of taking a social and a population perspective. But that was the same with tuberculosis and smallpox. So by and large, communicable diseases are better managed from a population point of view because the professionals involved are looking at the population as the denominator all the way through. Secondly, we need to think about value. And we've seen that resources doesn't mean money. There seems to be limitless amounts of money, but the problem was equipment or, even more important, staff time. And time is more of a resource than money. And we've also seen the importance of using digital communication. So there'll be many things coming out of this, but I've always found these sorts of crises useful in exposing the weakness of what we're doing. So we do need to think not only about populations when we're tackling problems like COVID, but when we're tackling problems like the increased number of older people, increasing rate of heart disease. So these are resource problems. And I think it has put the concept of resources, meaning more than money, in everybody's mind, because we've had limitless money and we still can't find the resources because clinician time is limited. So that, I think that's been a very useful outcome.
Yeah, especially in terms of outcomes, it seems to have kind of held up a mirror, doesn't it, to a lot of the issues that were present beforehand. But like you say, I think it's really kind of exposed and made them more obvious than they were before. Professor Sir Muir Gray, it's been a delight to chat with you about the inverse care law. Thank you so much for speaking with us at The Lancet.
Thank you. And The Lancet's got an important job to do. To speak truth to power, I think, is the mission, and help people understand these difficult concepts. So thank you to The Lancet from all of us.